ago. It is February 6th, it's a Wednesday, 2013, kind of chilly and overcast this morning, and we're at the New Albany YMCA, and I'm talking with Jerry Solomon, longtime employee at WHAS Radio. Jerry, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Are you a New Albany native? I know you live in New Albany.
I've lived here all my life, except for 6 months. My mother remarried, and we moved to South Bend, Indiana, and that lasted about 6 months. We came back, and I've...
You're a Hoosier through and through.
I'm a Hoosier through and through. I back the Hoosiers, yes.
Ah, good for you. Did you go to New Albany High School?
Went to New Albany High School, and then I didn't last long at Purdue. I had a football scholarship to Purdue.
Oh, really? I didn't know
and
that.
Back then, it wasn't a four-year deal. I busted up my leg, and at the end of the year, I was no longer available. So I came back, and I went to IU Extension then, which was only a two-year school.
Oh, yeah. Is that what IU Southeast is now?
Yeah, that's what it is now. It was called IU Extension. It was only 2 years, and you had to go to campus or transfer to Louisville. And then I went to U of L then and finished
that?
Up.
Yeah, good. Very good. So... You were in sales for all your career at Nerdy
My
Radio.
Whole career was in sales.
Now, how did that happen? Were you a born salesman? Were you a guy that sold lemonade on the stand as a kid, or how did that happen?
Well, I guess it started, I could bullcrap my way through life, I guess, but my uncle was the sales manager for Capitol Records at that time. And he needed a salesperson, so I was a salesperson for Capitol Records.
Doing what, in this area here?
In this area. We sold to, retail store. Of course, back then you had Kresge's and Woolworths, and you had
all... And in record stores.
In record stores here. And I sold that, and then when they closed...
This was when? When was this? What year was that?
This was 1962.
Okay.
And then when they... We were a distributor, and they came in and closed all distributors. And I had to get a job, and I went to work for a little station in Jeffersonville, Indiana, WXVW. Keith Rising was the owner. And
that's a name that's known in Louisville Broadcasting.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there for, I think it was 2 years, and then I got a job with Wave Radio, which was a move up. Mm-hmm. And... I was there like 2 years, and then WHAS put an FM station on.
Oh, okay.
It was a classical station. In fact, it was not WHAS FM. It was called FM WHAS. And because my uncle had a record store, and I'd sold classical music, and I got the job.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Who did you interview with? Remember who you interviewed with?
Jim Topmiller.
He was the sales manager?
He was the sales manager for AM, but he was also the sales manager for FM.
Which was a new venture.
It's a new venture. It was a venture that Barry Bingham wanted this classical music station on the air, and I got hired.
Any apprehension about that, starting a new venture, a new radio station,
classical
music? Yeah,
a new radio
music
station, and I was kind of leery because I was selling FM, AM. And this was an FM station.
Which was new at that time. FM was pretty new.
And at that time, 10% of the people had an FM radio.
Oh, my goodness.
90% didn't. And here I'm selling in a town that is not a New York town. It's more of a laid-back country town. And I'm selling classical music.
On an FM station?
On an FM station.
Your wife have anything to say about that?
Oh, no. But I got laughed at, and I got kicked out of a few places.
What made you decide to do that? Because that's because of all those obstacles there. Or?
I just wanted. It was a challenge. Mm-hmm. It was a challenge, and I thought I want to try it and see. And it was a challenge. And like I say, Barry Bingham Jr. actually went on calls with me. To Bick's Department, a women's store, people that he knew. Of course, he knew a lot of them because being the head of
And this was his baby, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, and it was his, and I shouldn't say it, but we lost a lot of money for a few years.
Were you the only salesperson?
I was the only salesperson.
How about that?
And I'm going to be truthful. I didn't bring in a lot.
It was difficult. Yeah.
It was, it really was. There was one other FM station. And like I say, there was only 10% of the people had a radio, FM radio. It was weird. It really was.
Well, at least your rates weren't as high as WHAS AM.
No, they weren't nearly as high. But wow. that lasted, well, the classical lasted, I think, about 3 years. And, of course, it was losing money. Of course, the Binghams were making money on everything else, but it was losing. And they finally changed it. NBC came up with a day-long news program. And we would break in like at 20 after for 10 minutes of local news and 10 before the hour for that. And that lasted about 2 years, and we were still not doing much. And that's when we went country with WAMZ.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
And, of course, that's been, you know, yeah, a great...
So you came in 1966, did you? That's when you started, 1966.
And then we moved over to the new building. And
now tell me about the old building. Now, we're saying old building now. This was in 1966, and you were in the Courier-Journal building Sixth and Broadway.
We were on a good floor because we were on the fifth floor, and that's where the cafeteria was, too. So but we were on the fifth and the sixth floor, and the old studios, you know, it was different. And then even TV then, see, Wave always says they were first with color, and they were first with color because HAS-TV didn't want to go color till they got in the new building.
Oh, but that was on the horizon when you came. Had they started talking? They obviously, when you came in 66, they were talking about it already.
But, it was a, you know, it was an old building, and, you know, rounded on a corner there, and the head people had offices on the corner.
Yeah, and it was quite a community, really, though, wasn't it? I
mean, it was.
The cafeteria and all the people that were newspaper, radio, and television.
And you had a lot of, you know, you had a lot more engineers then.
Yeah.
Which you have, like, you know, Clear Channel over now has like two or three engineers.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
back then we had like 15 or 20.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I started, you didn't face it, but the disc jockeys didn't spin the records. Mm. See, the engineer sat there, and he touched the button to spin the record.
Yeah.
And that was...
The disc jockey sat on a... And actually, on HAS then, there were no disc jockeys, were there?
No, they were announcers.
Huh. You remember who some of the people were when you came there?
Ray Shelton was one.
Mm-hmm.
Van Vance was there. Jim Walton was there. Of course, Milton was there at night.
Jerry Malloy, was Jerry David Malloy?
No, Jerry Malloy wasn't there then.
He wasn't there then.
He came a little later.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember Jerry coming. Now, I shouldn't even say this on here, but Jerry came, and, you know, a lot of radio stations, you know, they trade out stuff for refrigerators and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Binghams didn't believe in that. He comes in, and he said, "Where do you have a trade? I need a refrigerator and a stove for my apartment." We said, "Jerry, the Binghams don't believe in trade."
Welcome to the Bingham world.
Yeah, welcome to the Bingham world. That's right.
Now, what was the FM like when you put it on the air? You were in the older building. You didn't have disc jockeys there, did you? Or how did that operate?
No. Well, I'll tell you what, the gentleman you interviewed, Branch Bowden, was kind of the program director.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all on tape.
All automated.
Huh. It would fit in a room maybe 6x6.
Wow.
And so that... You know, it was simple to operate, but Branch decided what went on, you know, what opera, what, you know, movement or whatever he decided.
Did your experience selling classical records have any bearing on your career? Did that help?
No,
did help you at all?
It may have got me the job because I said knew that. I mean, other than that, and I'm glad it did because I had a nice career with HAS and then AMZ and then Clear Channel and all the way through. So I can't complain. I really can't. I've been very fortunate.
Your last year at HAS was when, did you say?
1999. October of 99. My wife retired from teaching in May of that year. And I was going to keep on, but it's like any business now. It was changing so fast, Jack, that I had, you know, in fact, Clear Channel at that time did not pay you if you had vacation days coming. So I told Mark, I got 9 days vacation, I'm gonna go on vacation, and if I come in with a suit and tie on, I'm staying. If I come in with just a sports shirt on, then I'm gonna give you a notice. So I came in with the sports shirt on, gave him a notice, and
there it
wasn't a 2 week because they had to hire somebody. I think I was there 3 or 4 months or something, but I got out, and I'm glad because I've had a good time with my with my grandchildren.
Yeah, that's 33-year career, though. That's, yeah. That's a long time. Well, let's go back to 1960. When did they move into the new, the building that was at...
1967.
We called it the new building.
The new building.
1967. It was at Chestnut and 6th up the block
there. Yeah, between Armory Place and 6th Street.
Still all that Chestnut. Was owned by the Binghams, though, wasn't it? You had Courier Journal and then what, the Standard Gravure
Standard
in the middle?
Standard Gravure was a printing and then...
Well, you got to watch that building being built and equipped and everything, wasn't
it?
What was that like?
That was something.
You go over and check it every day? Or
no, we wouldn't check it every day, but one thing is, and I think you remember, if you remember the boardroom.
Yeah, up on the second floor.
Long table.
Yeah.
See, that was supposed to be one piece. If you notice, it's down the middle. They couldn't get it in.
Well, sure, no place to put it.
There was no place. It was too big to get in.
Put the table and build a room around it.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful boardroom table. And they didn't take it up first. They had to cut that thing in half. And Binghams didn't. I don't believe they liked that, but they didn't have a choice.
Otherwise, have your conference table in the lobby or something.
Lobby
was something else too, wasn't it? There.
Well, the lobby we had the fountain.
Yeah.
That came up, but we had a problem. I mean, every day you go in, you'd see the vice presidents and the managers out there because the fountain was supposed to come down and, it spilled out onto the carpet day after day. And they would, I don't know how much money they spent on it, but they spent a ton on this fountain. And, over the years, they had it going a while, but after a while, they just gave up on it.
Yeah, I didn't think about this, but... The Binghams also spent some money on a fountain in the Ohio River, too, didn't they?
They spent money on a fountain in the Ohio River and left money for...
Same problem,
for,
I think.
Oh, same thing. Yeah, they left work, money yeah. for, for care of it.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long for that money to run out, and it was supposed to shoot up a fleur-de-lis.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
that.
And every time I saw it, there was just spray, and I did not see the fleur-de-lis design.
I forgot about their troubles with fountains over the years. Yeah. It's funny. So you moved into this then new building. Everything went over. Radio, television, everything.
Everything. Radio, television.
Said everything was new, huh?
Everything was new. Everything, the ashtrays, the garbage can. They didn't move anything except, the employees. We were old, but I mean.
Probably had some new ones there.
All furniture. Everything, Jack, was brand new. It was fantastic. It was. I thought, boy, we all had offices upstairs, TV was here, and we were here, had offices with doors on them, and later on that changed.
So you had a lot more room, of course.
Oh, yeah, we had a lot more room. Because when we were in the other building, there was three salespeople, and we were just in one room with the desks next to each other. And this way we had our own room and doors on the, doors on the office door, and it was nice, very nice.
So when... were you with FM? How long were you with the FM then? You were classical up through the country. How long were you with FM?
Well, no, when it got to be country, then I went back with strictly HASAM.
Now, when you were selling FM, were you selling both AM and FM or just FM before?
No. It was strictly, they just were separated.
Yeah,
they were
okay.
separated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but then you went with AM when in 19, what was that?
I went with AM in 1986.
86.
I went from being sales in HAS to sales manager of AMC in 1986.
Huh.
And that was, no, we were bought in 86. No, I'm sorry, 1984. Because we were purchased in 1986.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And.
Well, let's talk about the, let's go back just a minute and talk about, before we get into Clear Channel, let's talk about the Binghams a little bit. You mentioned you were hired to help Barry Jr. put on the FM station. Did you have much, what was your experience with the Bingham family? Did you have much experience with the Bingham family? How they treated their employees and all that sort of thing?
Well, the
what
Binghams,
they do with the community?
Whether I didn't always agree with their editorial viewpoint, but as far as working for someone, if you did your job, they took care of you. It was the old, it's the way business used to be, You take care of them, they take care of you. I mean, I could never complain. They were wonderful people to work for. I just never could complain about it.
Had much contact. Well, you had contact with Barry Jr.
I had contact with Barry Jr. because early on, with sales being kind of tough, then Barry would call me and want to go on sales calls with me. And I'd say, you're the owner, you can go with
Never
me.
Was upset with you because of a lack of results, because he recognized the challenge.
He knew the challenge with... begin with, classical music is not like country or pop. You're way down here. And then you only have 10% of the people have an FM receiver. It's crazy.
Pretty tough, I mean, yeah.
And we couldn't even get, here we are, the classical music station. And at that time, Wave Radio, AM, carried the Louisville Orchestra. Well, we tried because we're classical.
And you couldn't get them on there?
And we could not get them because, wait a minute, they'd say, there's not that many listeners. Huh. There's not that many receivers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we never got the Louisville Orchestra, and here we are, the classical music station.
And Louisville Orchestra was in its heyday during that time, too. And they were, that was almost like a UK or U of L basketball game.
Oh, yeah,
they were the top of their game.
Yeah. They really were. Yes, they were.
Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Who were some of the people you worked with during those early days, and then as you moved along?
Jim Topmiller was a sales manager.
He was there for a long time, a sales manager, wasn't he?
Jim was there for a long time.
Good man.
I forget how long Jim was there. He came up here as a salesperson and ended up as sales manager. And I worked with Kurt Smith, who was the other salesman. Mm-hmm. Bob Shear was the other salesman. Like I say, the people on the air were, Jim Walton and Van Vance and Bray Shelton and Milton, and there's engineers, and I can't even remember some of the engineers' names, but we had, like 15 or 20.
Well, you were there for the transition, though, where they moved not only to the new building, but began to, AM especially, began to change and become more DJ-oriented, to speak. What influenced that?
Well, I guess we hired a gentleman named Hugh Barr as program director, and I think he was the one that had the foresight to say, hey, we got to change.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we always had announcers, deep throat announcers.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then we hired Wayne Perkey. And I'm going to bring the story.
That's great.
But Wayne was there, and Wayne was a disc jockey.
Rock and roll disc jockey,
Not an announcer. And he was there a year, and the three salespeople and our sales manager got together and said, we got to get rid of this Perky guy. He's got a mush mouth. We got to get rid of him. Well, we were dead wrong. He lasted forever.
Yeah,
he did a
over
tremendous
30 years,
job for the station.
Brought in numbers, and you sold him, man.
Yeah, I'm tickled.
Singing his praises.
Tremendous individual. Tremendous individual.
Wow, that's great. So he moved into the new building then, and you're selling AM, FM, and then switched to AM.
It switched to AM, and then we, we hired more people.
Did sales techniques change at all? I mean, because you had the blocks of people, now you had personalities to sell. Did you have more sports packages and things like that?
Yeah, because we had the University of Kentucky at that time, and it changed a lot, selling the sports and selling the disc jockeys helped. I mean, because really, even the AM sales, we were kind of backward the way the radio business was going at that time.
Really?
And if Hugh Barr hadn't come along, we would have still been back here and not making as, I mean, we made money, but not as much as, we should have with a 50,000 watt station. I mean, you're putting out these, all over the country.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
Yet early on, we're not dominant in Louisville at all.
No, we were not. I mean,
it started
Wacky,
about the middle 70s or something like that.
Wacky was playing the rock and roll, and they were up there, and sometimes we get laughed at because we were still backward, mm-hmm. according to how the radio world was going at that
backward
time.
Backward in what way?
Well, I mean, we were still, deep throat. The music was not.
Yeah.
Not.
So Hugh Barr had an influence on that.
Oh, Hugh Barr had a big, I think Hugh had a big influence on it.
And you had of course, the thing that I remember, I came there in 1973, and the thing that I remember was that there was this community still on radio. The sales department was excellent, the news department was excellent, the on-air people were great, but everybody kind of worked together. There was no turf like saying, you stay out of my place. You could work with sales guys and they'd help you have an idea for how to produce a commercial or something. It all worked together.
Well,
I think
we did. I definitely think we did work together.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care what part it was, if it was a copywriter or
on
the
air,
personality, news or sports or anything, we worked together.
What do you think caused that?
I don't know, Jack. I wish I did.
Because many of those friendships have continued over the years. Oh, even yeah. I mean, you've talked about having lunch with Perky or Shelton or people over yeah. the years. That has maintained.
It's just, you just worked it. I don't know. I think it's not that way today. I think back then you did work together for the good, common good of that business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a key.
And I don't know that they do that now. Everybody's kind of for themselves.
Mm. And interesting.
Not, for the common good of the whole. And maybe I don't think that's good, but I'm kind of glad I'm this age now, so I don't have to
face memories anyway.
Put up with it. But I got yeah. good memories about it, yes. Yeah. A lot of good memories.
Now were you sales manager? You were sales manager for AMC?
Yeah, I became sales manager for AMC.
Yeah, now you developed a sales force there. At one time you were it, but who else was on AMC? Was Jane Vance, was she selling AMC?
Jane Vance was a sales manager.
Oh, she was sales manager.
Sales manager, and I was with HAS.
I see.
In sales, and when she went to regional sales manager, then I became WAMC sales manager.
Okay.
Then she became national sales manager, and I became regional
this
sales manager.
This during Clear Channel time? This is
yeah.
Clear, okay.
And then when Jane retired, then I became national sales manager.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I followed, and she was a wonderful lady. Believe me,
she knew
the business, yeah. and she was just so delightful to work with. I mean, wonderful
yeah,
lady.
Yeah, she really was. Who were some of the other salespeople you remember along the line? You
mentioned there was Kurt Smith, and there was Bob Shear was a salesperson. June Wood was a salesperson.
When did Bobby Frazier come?
Bobby Frazier came
AM.
In.
He was on HASA.
He was on AM in the 70s, 70 something. I forget
yeah, he
what.
Came there, yeah, he was there for a long
John
time.
John Beecham came there.
Oh yeah, Beecham. Again, an outstanding.
June Wood, I mentioned June. She was there.
Mark Thomas, when was Mark there?
Mark came in the 70s.
Now, Mike Crusham, was he was a salesman and became manager of the station,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he came when, Mike came and was a sales manager when WAMZ first started country music. He was a sales manager. Did a very good job, worked himself up, and got an offer to be general manager of a station in Tulsa, and moved around, and he came back here, and I don't remember the year, and was the general manager of AM/FM, HAS and AMZ.
You know, I bet that was sometime in the middle 80s, I bet.
It could have been.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he moved on to others.
You know, one time when in the early 70s, Mike lived across the street from me, and he was selling for, I think, WKLO. And I thought, he's a good guy. And I said, you want to go talk to the guys at HAS? And he did, and he came back and we got to work there.
Well, it was our business. Well, you were in the radio business, but everybody wanted to work for HAS and AMC because the other stations, if you didn't, if you didn't work quite right, you're gone. As general manager, a new one comes in, he fires everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But at HAS, it wasn't that way. We had people lasted 25, 30 years, which was unheard of in this business.
Yeah, really.
And especially in sales.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was totally unheard of. And general managers, they just didn't last. If they didn't quite do the job, boom, they're gone. Here comes a new one. And so everybody envied anybody that worked for HAS or AMC because the Minghams owned it. And you know, you do your job, they take care of you. But other stations weren't like that.
Yeah,
it was a
different
a
special
world.
Place, yeah, no question
it
about
really
it.
It really was.
Huh, that's interesting. What are some of the things, any events you remember during that time there? Any special events?
You know, I guess I started something. I remember one time we were having a something for Milton Metz. Over at the old Marriott in Clarksville.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was honoring him. And we had a governor of Kentucky, two ex-governors, Kay Wood, and all these people coming. And they said that the salespeople were supposed to wear a tux. And I said, well, the company's going to, no company doesn't do it. So I thought, well, if the company's not going to do it, I'll do it myself. And I got the brightest yellow tux that you've ever seen. and they thought I was Big Bird. And I went there, and it kind of set the tone, though. From then on, the company seemed to say, if we have an event like this, we're going to pay to rent a black tux. And I'll never forget that. It was a big occasion.
And you showed up as Big Bird. Huh?
I showed up as Big Bird, and I thought, if I have to pay for it to go to this, you know, event for my workplace, then I'll be able to pick out anything I want. I'll never forget that. Never.
Oh, wow. What were some of the challenges of selling WHAS? Do you ever have any big challenges?
Oh, yeah. I've had people say, because we were a 50,000 watt station, I don't need to advertise on you to cross the Ohio River. And, you know, they really, you know,
like
they
said,
we're paying for all these people out there that are not going to buy here in the metro. And it was a challenge, a lot of it.
You know, somebody we haven't mentioned, did you sell much farm programming with Barney Arnold?
Oh, I love Barney. In fact, I was very far. I worked with Barney. Of all things, I worked with Barney Arnold.
He was the farm director.
He's farm director at WHAS, tremendous farm director. Yeah. And my wife taught school with his wife in Clarksville, Indiana.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They were. But Barney was a tremendous guy to work for. I mean, I told a story with some one time. If Barney Arnold got on and said it's going to rain at noon, the farmers put up their umbrellas at quarter till.
he
had a back.
Wow.
In fact, I got a little, I had him do a commercial for a little appliance store, All-American Appliance Store here in New Albany, with just him selling, you know, his voice. He had people coming from Lexington, Kentucky to buy appliances at that appliance store.
Boy, that was power,
wasn't it? He was a tremendous
dealer.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, he...
Anybody else have that kind of power?
Well, Fred did, too. I think Fred followed him. Fred had that same thing. It was something else.
Kaywood was there much of the time.
Kaywood, but then, see, Kaywood couldn't do commercials.
In
fact, when Barney first started doing commercials, we finally fought the Binghams because all over the country, farm directors did commercials, but we didn't. Well, the Binghams, it hurt me financially because for a year they let Barney do them and we paid him, you know, to do them.
Wow.
Well, after a year, the Bingham said, nope, we're not doing it anymore. But they raised his salary on what he had, but then we salespeople going out and selling these people, and they say, I want Barney to do the spots. And they said, we can't. And they said, well, we're not buying.
Oh, wow.
And it was something.
Yeah. Well, with that kind of credibility, that was worth a lot of money, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he was dynamite. He was something else. Well, Perky, though, did a good job. All the jocks did a good job on commercials.
Again, it was a team effort, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
They weren't in an ivory tower somewhere. They were out somewhere. Yeah, let's go call on this client or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It made a world of difference.
Huh. Do you guys have any special packages and things like that? What kind of strategy went into selling a place like WHAS or WAMZ?
Well, you had the helicopter. You know,
traffic
Dick
guy.
Gilbert, you know, which was the only thing in town. I mean, you know, you had the, wasn't somebody on the street. It was a helicopter up there town.
Yeah.
And that was a good sell. But you just, I don't know, the disc jockeys, you could sell yourself almost.
Hmm. What about rates? How do they compare? Were you able to get more because after a while?
At first, see, we didn't have that kind of ratings.
Yeah.
We had to put packages together that were not, you know, low rates in order to get people on the air to get some results.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I remember, and I'll tell this one story, there was a place out in St. Matthews called Coster Swope, and it was a Buick dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were out in the East End where the rich people live, and I'd been after him, and finally, it was the end of the year models back then, you know, along October, November, they still had a lot left over from the prior year, and he advertised with me. And I went back out, you know, 2-3 weeks later, and he said, best thing you ever did. He said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I had these farmers coming in. He said, I want that one. Well, how are we going to finance? They said, wait a minute, they didn't reach in those bib overhauls and pull out that cash. He said, now, it was so easy because a lot of times I had our salespeople have these people you think's got a lot of money from the East End spend an hour with the client, and the client doesn't have any credit. And he's, Koster Swope stayed with the station for like 10 years because of that.
Boy, that's credibility, isn't
that
it?
Is. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. I mean, it took a long time to get him on because he was one that, why do we need all that coverage?
But he got those people from out of there, and listened to Barney and everybody else.
900 miles away.
Because they heard it on WHAS?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Wow.
That's like, I remember a story of Bob Shearer, who was a salesperson, and Bob got the Purnell sausage to advertise. And at that time, we weren't a network for the University of Kentucky. It was just us.
Mm-hmm.
And down, it was a county down on the Tennessee border, and I forget what county it was. But that year, his sales went up 30% because of one thing. They were advertising on University of Kentucky basketball.
Wow.
And Purnell stayed on it for years and years after that.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah. That was Al Purnell. That was it.
Do you remember, that was an interesting thing about sales, that sometimes a catchy thing would come along that you hadn't even planned on, but that would be a catchword like, that's good, you know,
Brown. Oh, yeah.
Remember any other? I was trying to think of some other clients like that.
What was the one, the one with Metz, I forget. It was a pharmacy, Metz. Metz was on 9 to midnight or 9:30 to midnight. And it was a pharmacy at 18th and Market, which you wouldn't think. What was Leon's name? I forget. But anyway, Leon makes the pill easier to swallow. And it was a pharmacy, and he, again, here we're talking about personalities. Milton Metz had such believability that he had people from Kansas would send a prescription to this pharmacy.
Is that right? Because they're listening at night.
Because they're listening, and fill it out and send it.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, the pill makes it, Leon makes the pill easier to swallow.
I hadn't heard that one. That's a good one.
And he was, and the thing with radio, you think you got to run a lot of spots. Well, Leon only ran three. He ran Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Milton, one spot a night.
And got that kind of results.
Because that was, Milt was, had a following and a believability. And Milt was one that he wouldn't do just any commercial. He would check it out every time before he did one, so he wouldn't use his, lose his credibility.
Sure, that was important to him, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It was fantastic.
Wow, well, that had to be some fun times doing that.
Oh, it was. It was fun.
What were some of the challenges you had in addition? Of course, you had rates and ratings early on. Any other challenges you think of?
No, I don't think there was that many challenges, Jack. It was just, it was a good station. It was good people. We had different general managers, and you had some come through there, and some were not that good and didn't last long. But the thing is, you had that general manager, but all these people below him,
they stayed.
Everything succeeded, whether that was there or not.
You had to work. Let's talk about the process of, you would go sell a commercial or sell a, then you had to get it produced and on the air. Who'd you work with to do that kind of stuff?
Well, Brent Bowden was a copywriter.
Mm-hmm.
We would go out, if they didn't have an ad agency, if you were calling on what we call a direct account, not an ad agency, then we would go out and, get some information from the client, go back, give it to Brent Bowden, he would write it, and we'd go back to the client, that's fine, and if they wanted a particular disc jockey, then,
if they want a Perky or Metz or Van
Metz
or
Jack Fox
like
or anybody, then, they would pay them to do that. Otherwise, it was just whoever was available or the...
Who were the production directors then? Was that, Jim Ferguson was there for a while.
Ferguson was there.
Polk was there for a while.
And then Polk was there.
Uh-huh.
John Polk.
And then Scott Gettle, I guess.
Scott was the last one I knew.
Yeah.
Scott was there when I left.
And that was really a... That was an essential part for you guys, the salespeople, weren't it? Because that was, people would hear the end result, but there was a result, there was a process that had to go through and make it sound good, or people wanted to hear it and everything.
Yeah, we had one girl, I remember Bob Shearer was a salesperson, and we had a lady that wrote commercials, and he came in and gave her a 60-second commercial, and she was a good copywriter, but this time she kind of coofed and wrote the copy, and she gave it to Bob, and he looked at it, and She forgot to put the client's name anywhere in the 60 seconds.
Masterpiece spot. Aside yeah, from that.
It was a tremendous commercial, but it wouldn't have done the job. Bob and I, he told me we died laughing. But.
You know, that's kind of interesting because I know that wasn't intentional, but when I watched the Super Bowl ads the other night, sometimes you watch this whole thing for 60 seconds and you see the client right at the end. You think, what happened? Who was the client?
That's what I don't understand. Yeah. We were watching it with some friends and we'd say, wait a minute.
Who's this?
What is it? And then at the end, you see the name, and usually back on radio, you wanted their name in five or six times.
Sure.
It wasn't down at the end or the beginning. You had it in there numerous times.
Yeah.
And you had to do it.
Huh. You remember, were there perks for sales guys? I mean, if you did a good job, did you guys have regular outings to do things? Or?
Well, basically, when I started, we were on a salary, and then we got on commission. And, you know, I liked it because the more I sold and the harder I worked, the more I made. I didn't mind that at all, that someone over here got a salary. Then when I got into management, then you had a salary plus an override,
yeah,
too, there.
Yeah.
But, no, I worked on commission, and I never...
You did all right. You don't look like you missed too many meals, so that was good.
No, I didn't see. I had missed too many.
No, you're looking good. You're looking good.
But, no, I was happy with it that way.
Good.
And I think in sales... In fact, see, the Binghams turned me down on it when I got sales manager. What I wanted to do is, we had two secretaries and the traffic lady that puts the log together for the station.
Yeah, we didn't mention that in the process there, getting it on there. You had to go through traffic, get a schedule and all that stuff.
What I want to do, if we make budget, then we give each one of those that month $100, and they wouldn't do it.
Is that right, huh?
Because they didn't do it over at the newspaper, and that's like when I first started. Most stations, other than WHAS, were on commission. But because the Binghams had the paper and they didn't set their people
that
sold advertising for the paper were salaried.
Wow.
And they didn't believe in that. It was hard for them to really become a commission salespeople. They didn't believe in it.
To keep up with the rest of the world, really. Let me go back to just one of the, we talked about the process, getting a commercial on the air. Do you ever have occasions where, you know, you've worked hard, you've got somebody on the air, you've got the commercial produced the way they want it, and then it's going to run at maybe a UK basketball game or U of L ball game or something, and it messes up on the air or something? Have you ever had that happen to you
before? We've had that happen.
What's that like, home and listening? You're listening, but, man.
Well, the client goes ballistic. I mean, I go ballistic because it happened. But, you know, back then you had tape and stuff that could break or anything.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like now. They're on computer.
Yeah.
You know, I've had clients.
If you get calls during a...
Oh, yeah.
Where's my spot? What's going on?
And we always had it, in January, we always had a little award for the person that had the first Christmas spot on, because somebody would forget and run a client, you know, from December in the middle of January, they'd put the spot on and it'd be
after
celebrating Christmas. And we always had a little award for the salesperson that ran the first spot for the next year, which was not true. It was for last year.
Going to jump on the next year, yeah. Just to mention a couple more names, you mentioned Brent Bowden. I'm talking about the chain of getting something on the air. You had the traffic people. Would that be Ann Hubbs?
Ann Hubbs.
Helen Huber.
And Helen Huber.
Yeah,
they were tremendous.
Yeah, they were.
They really were. They were
log together, which was required by the FCC, but that was a record for you all, too, for your clients, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we've...
That's how you could charge them.
In fact, you know, a lot of times Fridays people take off early. Well, those people there putting that log together had three logs to get out Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
And then you have ball games in there with the tournament time. You didn't know what was going to happen.
You didn't know what was going to happen.
That's right.
And they may have to put, well, when it was tournament time, they may have to put two logs together.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if there's a game, if they get beat, and if they don't get beat,
you know,
it was something. It really was. And like I say, I was lucky to have people like Ann and Helen, and now, well, Helen's still out at at HAS, and Ann's at DRB,
yeah,
I think. She's still at DRB.
Well, now, you were there from the start in 1966 and worked with the Binghams, transitioned to the new building. Then in the 86, you had another transition.
Yeah,
we
had...
Talk to me about that.
The Binghams, Sally Bingham wanted to sell, you know, when... money for her part in owning the Binghams.
Well, the senior Binghams were getting older. I guess they had to face
senior
that.
Senior was getting older, but Sally wanted, I think, if I remember right, $32 million. Barry did not want to give her $32 million, wanted to give her $25 million. And Mr. Bingham, the father, stepped in and said, we're not going to, you know, have our laundry out here in front of everybody, so we're going to sell it. So he put it up, and it was a deal. He could sell, and because of lawyers, his son, Worth Bingham's widow, owned part of it too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and she had lawyers that looked after her. So when it was for sale, it could be, you know, if you bid on it and I bid on it and I was 3% below you, I could still get it because they put a 5% deal in. And that, but that didn't matter. But the it was really eerie. Clear Channel bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were buying it, and the owner happened to be in China at the time. And of course, when somebody's buying a radio station, you go check out the owner. Well, we checked this out. You didn't check out too good.
We is who?
Well, the salespeople, Jim Topmiller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we don't like this. So we told the Bingham. So they flew him in here, and it was Wayne Perkey and myself, Kurt Smith, sat there telling this new
Larry
owner,
Mays.
Larry Mays, the owner of Clear Channel, telling him that his stations aren't worth a diddly. And I went home and I told my wife, I said, I may be looking for another job. Well, Larry had a guy running the whole operation.
Now, at that time, Clear Channel was not a big outfit.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Time,
they
no.
had maybe six stations.
Yeah.
Very
headquartered
small,
in San Antonio,
very,
Texas.
Yeah,
no.
They were out of San Antonio. They had an AM, FM there. They had some in down
New Orleans?
Farther in Texas and one up east.
Hmm.
But I mean, we're telling this owner that
yeah.
his thing's not worth it. You know, you're bad people. Well, it was a guy running the thing. I forget his name, but he ran the radio stations for Mays.
Yeah, Mays was not a broadcaster.
No, Mays was really, he was into money.
Yeah, he was an investor, basically,
yeah.
An accountant investor.
And so John was his first name. I forget his name. But anyway, he was running the operation. And he was horrible.
Mm.
In fact,
it made the way he treated employees or things.
Oh, the way he treated employees, and he never, he ran nobody. He wouldn't let anybody run a department. He overrode everything.
Wow.
And
completely different atmosphere from what you guys.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So we were there. He was there about a year and a half, and Mays found out he got rid of him.
Wow.
In fact, he could that man. Who was over all the radio could not come to Louisville unless we asked him to come.
Wow.
Because he was that bad. I mean, it was, they had a reputation. And I think Mr. Mays saw through this that if he wanted to hire a good disc jockey, and this just disc jockey checked out what people thought of the station, he wouldn't work for him. So I think he saw that and got rid of him.
Well, Jerry, I'm trying to remember, was there a group, were you involved, or was there a group locally that tried to buy it instead
yeah,
of Clear Channel?
Three. Bob Shearer, Mark Thomas, and who's the news director?
Brian Rublin?
Brian Rublin.
Is that right?
Those three put something together.
Was that because of the Clear Channel, or they just wanted to have a shot at it?
Oh, they wanted to have a shot at it.
Yeah.
They wanted to have a shot, but I think they were well under what Larry, you know, put in.
So Clear Channel came in.
Bought it, and really brought it up. I mean, even more.
Did things change much
didn't.
No, I didn't think so.
There was a...
Had local management? No.
Local Bob Shearer ran it.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go down there for meetings once a year and everything, but in fact, they never changed. We were so afraid because we'd heard about this company that we would lose jobs. Well, we were bought by Clear Channel. The television was bought by Providence Journal. And we never lost anything. Providence Journal signed their contract and buying WHS television at 9 in the morning, 11 o'clock, it told 20 people, you got 1 hour to get out of here.
Wow.
So
wow.
We were, you know, yeah. We were the ones that thought.
Yeah. That you were going to be in trouble, and you're the ones that came out.
We were in great shape.
Yeah.
Tremendous. So I'm, no, it was good. You know, they did a good job.
See, did you see changes as Clear Channel began to grow? Of course, HAS was kind of a cash cow for them. I mean, they
HAS and AMZ were cash. See, when I was with AMZ, they were like 55 to 60 cents of every dollar went to the bottom line. And I mean, this is unheard of.
Wow, yeah.
But you only had like four disc jockeys.
Yeah.
You know, now HAS had more people, so they were returning in the 30%
which was
range.
Pretty good.
Which is good. Yes, it is. But no, we were the top. Until they got into a lot bigger markets, we were the top producers.
Did you start to see changes during that time? Were you? When did
changes
start coming?
They were close. They watched the dollar.
Yeah.
And
now they were
portion was. I mean, as far as firing people, no.
No.
But I mean, as far as getting raises sometimes for the people and doing certain things, like they got rid of the helicopter because it was too expensive and stuff like that. It was a bottom line decision.
But that began to happen as they began to grow other stations. They need money to do things.
And we were paying for.
Let me go back to one other thing. You mentioned WAMZ. You're very involved with that. You worked with people like Coyote Calhoun. You were there with
Bobby
Coyote Calhoun,
I guess,
then. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed it. They were. Well, Bobby Jack's now working for a radio station selling, I think.
Is
now.
That right? Huh?
And of course, Coyote's still over there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Of course, with the broadcast now, they've only got two live disc jockeys.
Is
they
that
got
right?
One in the morning, one in the afternoon. I don't know who the afternoon is now, but yeah, it's cut back. But Coyote was a character.
Yeah. 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 Easy to work with.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Coyote was all right. I can't complain about it.
Very good, very good. Well, sounds like an outstanding career. You feel you retired in 99?
Retired in 99, I've enjoyed every minute. I mean, the only
thing
I miss.
You go back and have you been back at all? Oh, let me ask you this. Let's see, when did they move into the building over on Bishop Lane? Were you involved in that?
Yeah, we moved there, 99, maybe 97.
So in your,
like that,
in your 33-year career, then you were from
the old building, the new building, to Bishop Lane.
Yeah, was that like to move to the Bishop Lane? What was that like?
It was nice. The only thing I hate, living in Indiana, I could go across to either the bridge and right downtown. Now I had to take the expressway to get to work.
Yeah,
but I mean, it was an older building. There again, I'll give you a good example. We were talking about how, you know, Clear Channel, they're a little tight with everything. Well, we get in that building and there's 15... air conditioners up on the roof. So, you know, we called the air conditioner man, checked, and he said, you need to replace them all. So we called headquarters, and he says, well, get a second opinion. So we did. Next one comes in, says, well, you need to replace them all. We call headquarters, replace five of them. So we replaced five of them, and then over the next year or two, we replaced every one of them.
It
was...
Had to do it. It's
and the studios, as you well know, you were an announcer, you know, you got thick studios.
Yeah.
Well, what Charlie Strickland wanted, you know, design, and, you know, you had windows already in the building, and he wanted to make a hallway between there to put the studios with the thick. They put them right next to that window. Well, guy's on the air, he's talking, there's a fire engine going by, you could hear the fire engine. They were good people, but they were very conservative people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little different from somebody told me this story about when they put the studios in the Courier Journal building, special design so the presses wouldn't be heard and all that, that it was, you know, it was very quiet up on the sixth floor in the middle of everything, you couldn't hear anything.
No,
so,
well, you know, even when you were there, all right, the studio you were in was not just on concrete, it was built so that if there was an earthquake, it moved.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of unheard of.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
It really
design
did.
Went into it.
It really did.
Yeah, good. Well, you've had some special times. Any other special memories you recall?
No, I just, the retirement, I mean, like I say, I've enjoyed it, but I miss the people, and I'd still like to see them. And in fact, you don't know, sitting here talking to you, I'm just elated that, you know, we work together, and I get to see you, and we're so close, you're in Louisville, not here, and I just enjoy seeing the people.
Well, we'll have to make sure you're on the list for at least once a year. They have a meeting of WHAS people. We meet at Austin's out on Brownsboro. Ray Shelton and Dave Jones are the guys behind it.
I'd love
we'll get
to.
You on that list because you would love. Last time there were about 33 or 34 people there.
That's great.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
That is great.
Yeah.
That is super.
Very good. Well, Jerry, good luck to you in the future. Thanks for taking the time. This will go on the archives and people for years and years and years get to have some special memories of WHAS.
Okay, Jack.
Thanks.
Thank you.
See you on the golf course, man.
Will do.
All right.